put stuff in
Cohasset State Affairs Committee. Cohasset State Affairs Committee to order at 9:14 on the 27th of March 1990. Let the record show that Representative Finkelstein,
Menard.
And Hanley.
Boucher. Chairman Boucher.
Okay.
Regroup.
I'll arrive in about 5 minutes. And Chairman Boucher present. First piece of legislation that we have before us is Committee Substitute for Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 43 relating to the Permanent Fund Educational Program for Alaska Students. The prime sponsor, Senator Coghill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The resolution is straightforward. What we're doing is that we're encouraging, the legislature's encouraging the efforts of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation to provide this educational program for Alaska students. It has to do with an animated program of Mac the Moose and Jennifer the Rabbit. And it teaches kids all in the second grade, teaches them in the primary system and in the elementary system and the secondary system school of where the permanent fund dividend check comes from. And it doesn't grow on trees, and it's an investment program. It's an investment program for the future. These are the people that are going to be the decision makers when the permanent fund may be needed to be used, either as an investment program, and it's a good program because it gives them the foundation of what the returns on investments and that type of thing are all about. I don't have a copy of it. I gave it to one of the schools here in Juneau, but it's a real fine program. It was put on by a bunch of teachers from Fairbanks, and it's very well received.
We had the opportunity to see it.
And I would encourage any and all of you to co-sponsor it.
Thank you, Senator Coghill.
Mr. Chairman, I would move CS for Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 43, State Affairs, to the next committee of referral with individual recommendations.
Any objections? So moved.
Thank you,
Senator.
Mr. Chairman.
Next item we have before us is House Bill 586 by the Judiciary Committee, an act placing certain military employees, the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs, in the exempt service and providing for an effective date.
Jeff Morrison is here, right?
All right. Who's going to testify on it?
Mr. Chairman,
Jeff Morrison. Must be in the air today.
I'll be hearing about it.
That's all right. I'm glad Jeff Morrison, I'm not the only one afflicted with it.
Legislative liaison for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. We appreciate you scheduling this so soon. I don't know if Representative Goomberg just came in, if he wanted to introduce the bill or not, or discuss it, but we appreciate his committee introducing this bill on the behalf of the department. I believe you all have in your bill folders a position paper on this bill that explains what the bill does. I think rather than go at length through the position paper, I'd like to ask Colonel Ken Taylor to come up and address the committee and explain what caused the reason for the bill to be introduced in terms of the federal funding cycles and stuff like that. So if I could ask Colonel Taylor if he would join me here and explain the situation a little from his perspective. Ken, did you want to?
First of all, Representative Goenberg, did you want to testify on this, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate you very much, your scheduling this bill so quickly. It's to deal with a specific problem, and there are a number of different potential solutions to the problem. I'm not certain that we're going to ultimately come out with this particular one, but what we wanted to do today was to have some testimony from both the department and some of the unions and other interested people, and then we are in the process of some negotiations, and I hope we'll be able to come back with a solution that everybody agrees upon. Thank you.
I Colonel.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to come testify before you today. I'm Colonel Ken Taylor, the commander of the 176 Composite Group, which contains all of the units of the Alaska Air National Guard. And I would agree that the bill that we have here is mostly a vehicle for us to, vehicle for discussion about how we can achieve some objectives, which I'd like to explain, the objectives and the opportunity that brings us here. As some of you or all of you may know, the federal government typically works on a 5-year programming cycle. There's always multiple 5-year plans underway in the defense establishment, and essentially from the time you take a routine requirement until it becomes funded in a matter of reality, positions, particularly we're talking about here, employees, is often 5 years and seldom any less than 3 years. But what will often happen is that there will get to be a disconnect between availability of funds to meet some legitimate objective that we have and the programming of manpower spaces. And that happens with some frequency. That's the sort of event that brings us before you here today. We are afforded an opportunity to have 8 crash rescue specialist positions at Culiss Air National Guard Base as soon as we can find the vehicle to employ them. The funding is there to do that. The funding would be, there to hire them right now, but we do not have the personnel or manpower vehicle to do that. Our first and normal solution to that would be to have federal positions, as the vast majority of National Guard positions are, but those positions do not exist. The dollars do exist. So the solution we're attempting is to have state positions that would be fully federally funded, and in fact that is happening as a part of the appropriations process. What brings us here, though, is some concerns I have for how those individuals have to fit within our military organization. I think that's the first thing we have to recognize, is what we have is a military organization with certain military requirements, like wearing of uniforms, an unusually high standard of physical fitness, training in various kinds of skills that are not common in the civilian population, such as lethal combat type skills and things of that sort. So we need for new people who come into military type positions in our organization to fit within this military framework, and I think that's what brings us to where we are today. Jeff Morrison can talk about in a minute about some of the reasons why we chose this particular alternative over perhaps some other alternative. But let me talk a little bit about the two types of specialties we're talking about here. The first one I've already mentioned, the crash rescue specialist, and the second being security people. At Anchorage International Airport right now, we have a volunteer crash rescue department, we in the Air National Guard. It's made up mostly of mechanics and other types of people. One full-time federal employee to supervise the overall program. And we respond to fire equipment rollouts along with Anchorage International Airport. We respond with a full crash crew per truck, 4 people or more per truck. The airport complies with civil requirements, 1 operator per truck. So what that means is the airport people have the capability to spray foam on fires and perhaps put a fire out, but we have the only capability to extract people from a crashed aircraft. And in fact, every single crash in my memory that has happened, going back to the Capitol DC-8, what was that, 1968, something like that, it's been primarily guardsmen that have done the extraction job. We did extract Senator Ted Stevens from his Learjet when it ended up upside down in International Airport. Now, the primary purpose for those people to be there, from the federal government's point of view, and the reason they pay for them, is to support our military requirements. But there is no doubt that they extend a great benefit to the community, both economic and life and safety. What we're being offered is the opportunity to have 8 full-time positions, and I would intend to keep the volunteer system that's served us well so far. So we will have the coverage, again, for our military purposes, but extending its benefits into the community, I would envision at least 16 hours a day. We would expect those same people, though, to meet other military requirements. For example, our full-time people are our most experienced, seasoned, and I would hope our most competent people in the Guard. because they can devote 100% of their attention to being that way. So we require them to be members of the military unit, because if we do go off to war, and remember that's why the federal government is paying for all this, it would be a shame to leave 8 of our best people behind. I think you can understand why we would not want to do that. We want them to go off to war with us. So we need to require them to be members of the Guard. We require many of our people, and I believe these would be the same, to qualify with weapons. That is not a typical thing for your average firefighter. And I would make the distinction between these people and firefighters as you find them in municipalities and at the airports and things of that sort. Going on to the security people, I think most of us, I'd like to find a better name for it, because when we think of security, I think we're thinking of policemen. We see policemen in the community, we see private policemen, and at the international airport. But these folks would be trained more in the nature of light infantry. The thing that we're concerned about being secure from is more terrorist attacks and that sort of thing than it is somebody stealing a typewriter or something off of our airplane. I'm not sure how much dissemination it got in the general community, but a number of years ago, down in Puerto Rico, several of their A-7 aircraft were destroyed by terrorists. There's been a lot of interest in the National Guard since then on trying to upgrade the quality of security that we afforded our installations around the country, because each of our aircraft is worth $20 to $30 million. And that's where this fits in. But those people, again, are not not trained and equipped with nightsticks and sidearms. They train with automatic weapons, grenade launchers, medium machine guns, things of that sort that are, I think, more commonly thought of as being military peculiar type activities as opposed to being something that you would expect a policeman to do. So it's very important, from my point of view, to have the same degree of control, the same kinds of standards, the same types of training for these people as I would have for the existing types of folks that I have in the, as full-time staff in the Alaska Air Guard. And that pretty well lays out the reason why I believe we need a vehicle, of which it seemed to me the exempt status was a vehicle, to be able to require the same kinds of standards that I would require of active duty guardsmen. And some of, by the way, some of the guardsmen I have are active duty guardsmen, and I would like to extend the same sorts of control, training standards, and all that to this group of employees. One further thing I would add is that since I went to work full-time in the Guard, we've gone from 184 full-time people to we'll have about 600 in the next 18 months. I think we've been pretty aggressive at trying to bring the benefits in the area of life safety and all that they can bring to the state, plus the economic benefit, plus the improvement of the capability of our organization. I would like to have the vehicle to be even more aggressive and more flexible in the future to exploit opportunities that come up where the money base may be there, but the federal manpower system is lagging behind, to see if I cannot do better in the future than we've done in the past. And I think we've accomplished quite a bit in the past. So perhaps the best thing to do now is to turn it over to you, Jeff, to translate what I view as the military requirements into how it fits into the state personnel system.
With your permission, Mr. Chairman, the there are creating these positions in the exempt service essentially takes them out of being a classified position, and I'd like to explain why we feel that is necessary. There are a number of protections afforded to individuals in the classified service, and these protections are through personnel rules and bargaining agreements and so on. We do not feel that we would be giving that up by having these people in the exempt service, because by the nature of their being in the Alaska National Guard and military, there are probably more military regulations dealing with personnel and the security of their employment rights than the state has. I don't know that for a fact. All I'm saying is that they're not going to be giving up, they're not going to be serving at the whim by being in the exempt service. They will be protected through federal regulations. the classified physician vehicle is a possibility. It is still a possibility, but we view it as a much less desirable option for the reasons I'd like to expose to you now. There is no doubt that these positions have to be military positions. We will require them to be members of the Alaska National Guard. We can do that through the classified service. It would require us creating a new classification for these positions. In fact, probably several new classifications, since we would have firefighters and senior team leaders and crew chiefs. It would be probably at least three different classifications involved, all of which we would require to be a member of the Alaska National Guard. Because they would have to be subject to the military discipline of the Alaska National Guard, there would be a number of requirements that we would have to place on those positions that if they were in the classified service, we would have to negotiate with whichever bargaining agreement or which bargaining unit represented those positions. Some of these requirements would be that they would have to adhere to the very strict physical standards, and if they did not, they would lose their job. They would have to pass random drug tests, and if they did not, they would lose their job. They would be subject to other provisions, which I personally don't know a great deal about, but I was in the military for several years, and I know that you really have to watch your P's and Q's, and if they did not, they would be subject to military discipline and potentially lose their job. So it's a very strict military regimen that they would need to adhere to. And all of these, if they were in classified service, would need to be negotiated with whichever bargaining unit represented these people. If we were unable to have successful negotiations and to the point where these individuals, where the bargaining unit representing them would agree to the military requirements of these positions, then, quite frankly, I don't know where we'd be if we had positions on board. We may have to scrap the program, because we just cannot sacrifice the military control that the Colonel Taylor needs in order to effectively run this program. So since we feel that the probability of finding that, of reaching that type of agreement is fairly slim. And also because there is a much larger time element involved in creating a classified position than would be an exempt position. We felt that creating these positions in the exempt service would be the best way to get these positions hired on. One of the comments that, and by the way, we've had the opportunity to discuss this at some length with both Representative Bloomberg and Sharon Macklin, who represents APEA, just before this meeting, and Mr. Piazza, I believe, is listening on teleconference. So, the bill is really fairly general, and the reason it was drafted in general terms is to give us more flexibility in the future to address these types of needs. If it is the desire of the committee to make it specific solely for federally funded, for these eight federally funded positions, that solves our immediate need. We would appreciate being able to have the flexibility to address other general needs of this type that could happen in the future. And that's why the bill is written the way that it is. So it's a general bill, and the purpose is to give us flexibility so that in the future we can address these when additional situations come up. But I don't think we'd have any objection to making it less general and more specific if that addresses some of the concerns that we feel could be raised about the bill. I think that pretty much concludes our testimony, Mr. Chairman, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Who do we have online to testify?
We should have Bob Piazza, the business manager for Public Safety Employees Association.
in Anchorage. Bob, do you want to come ahead and testify now before there's questions from the committee? Are we there? Are you online, Anchorage?
Yes, I am. I'm sorry. I have a bad connection, and I'm picking up about every second or third word. This is Bob Piazza, if you're trying to address me.
Okay, Bob, probably the problem here, we weren't close enough to the microphone. With these microphones, you just about, you have to hold your mouth about an inch from the speaker. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, sir, I can.
Okay, go ahead, Bob.
Yes, Chairman Boucher and fellow members, my name is Bob Piazza. And as you heard earlier, I'm the business representative for the Public Safety Employees Association. I've asked to speak today on Bill 586, first of all, in favor of the allocation of the positions. The association does not oppose that. And indeed, I was sorry to, I think I heard earlier that if the positions are put into the classified service, they would probably be abolished, and I'm sorry to hear that. What I am here to really address is the placement of these positions into the exempt service. We don't believe that is equitable for the employees. They are indeed civilian employees who have to adhere to stringent military code, but that is not unique. As you may know, the majority of the employees our association represents have the same requirements. The only different requirement that these employees have is that they're required to be a member of the Alaska National Guard, which, from my point of view, does not place enough emphasis on positions to qualify them for the exempt service. I would ask that, in consideration of the bill, that they not be placed into the exempt service, but be allowed the rights of classified employees. And if I could answer any questions, I'd be glad to do that.
Are there any questions from the committee? Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just looking at some of the criteria and some of the requirements, Bob, for these new employees, I'm looking at passage of annual physical fitness tests, random drug tests that will be required under the military regulations. Would that be allowed if they were classified employees?
Yes, if they're in our bargaining unit, which is the reason why I'm speaking, because I believe that's a proper placement for community of interest. Yes, our people are subjected to annual physical testing. As a matter of fact, we tried to negotiate mandatory drug testing this year, and we're still trying to get that in. The state's having a problem with that. They do have a CERT team, which operates strictly on terrorism attacks, and they do its traction on crash fire at the airport. So all these areas are addressed already with our people, the people we represent.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions from the committee? If not, my understanding is that this piece of legislation needs some work. And what I would like to do is have the principal committee chair, Representative Gruenberg, get together with your people here, Sharon, and the departments, and see if we can't come up with something that is equitable and satisfies everybody. Yes. Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to ask a question of Colonel Taylor. Do you anticipate that these new employees would be taken from members who are already in the Guard? Would that be the first place you would be looking, or would these have to be specialized, have specialized training, and then would come into the Guard and receive that training in addition to maybe training they've received in the public sector?
I could see them coming in to us in about three ways. I think we have on our military manning document now crash rescue specialists that are already trained in this way. Many of those people, however, have, well, in fact, all of them except our full-time fire chief have jobs in the community, and many of them may wish to continue with their current civilian careers. We would provide the opportunity for people who are already members of our organization to become trained in that area, and we would seek to recruit new people who could qualify for military membership as well as qualifying for those kinds of positions. So I would guess that all three of those would be the way we would fill those positions. And I would, by the way, say that I have some hope that we may go beyond the eight employees. I don't think we'll go much beyond that, but again, it's my hope to be able to afford a 24-hour-a-day coverage for my facility, which again would have that collateral benefit for the community at the airport.
Representative Greenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On that last point, I gather that on that last point, I gather that you basically have two-thirds of the necessary funding for 24-hour?
That's where we're sitting at right now, and I think in our discussions we mentioned it, but I don't believe we've mentioned it here, that because of the process that we think we'll be going through, right now we have identified funds to start from June, was it, Jeff? From June to fund these positions. Now, if we are unable to develop an expeditious system to create the manpower spaces in the state personnel system, then it would be my intent to forego the positions for certain, at least until the 1st of October, and perhaps longer, because under the federal system, if I'm given money to spend, I'm expected to spend it down to the last penny, and I will be penalized severely through the budget process if I don't do that.
Well, my question, Mr. Chairman, goes to the amount of time per day that the firefighters are going to be on station. And what I'm wondering is, what is the possibility of being able to provide 24 as opposed to 16-hour service out there at the airport?
There's a strong possibility, and it's possible we could provide more than 16 hours, even within the manpower authorizations we're being given. But we will look to work that issue, both from the standpoint of making sure we have enough manpower authorized and the way we manage the manpower to make the most use of what we're given. I don't intend to give up my current volunteer capability. It's served us well for many years. So I consider this to be an additive to that capability. If I get the opportunity to attract more positions, I'll do that. I think we've got a pretty good reputation about bringing capability and bringing employment into the community.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question of Mr. Piazza. What I'd like to do as soon as this meeting breaks up, Bob, is to dial you up online and continue our informal discussions with you on a speakerphone, and we'll dial you at the number you are. I understand that Sharon Macklin has that number. You going to be available to talk with us immediately?
Yes, sir, I will.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I'd like to have you get back to us just as soon as you possibly
bet.
Can on this. So for the time being, we'll just hold it in committee subject to hearing if and when the parties get the problem resolved.
Mr. Chairman, I would hope that we'll get back to you by the close of business today.
All right, thank you. If there are no more business to come before the committee, House State Affairs is adjourned.